9 y de la tarde. you teach in this particular, and the second post-graduate was language practice, University of Free State, funded by Department of Arts and Culture. And then prior to that, I've been a language activist throughout my whole career. I was one of the unemployed language practitioners, because by virtue of having a degree in languages, I became unemployed at some stage in my life. I was awarded a sponsorship through a project called Devotion, initiated by Pensalt to study translation and interpreting at the University of Pretoria. I think it was early 2000, 2001. Then, I successfully completed the project or the program, and then I became actively involved in language matters in my village, Moretele, in the North Coast. I was a Moretele local government, local municipality language forum, which was an initiative of Pensalt. And then I continued until 2005. I got employed by the Northwest Provincial Legislature as an interpreter and translator. I stayed there. I was one of the pioneers of the Hansard unit in Setswana. Then I proceeded to the then Department of Water and Forestry as a language practitioner, proceeded to Government Communications and Information System, GCIS, as Assistant Director of Language Services, focusing on short group of languages, which are Setswana, Sepedi, and Sesotho, Setswana, and Sepedi, so from the Sotho group. Then through transfer promotion, I went to the Department of Public Works, currently where I'm Deputy Director of Language Policy Implementation. But through all out, I've been participating in matters of language, as you can see on my CV. As we speak, I'm the member of Academy of African Languages, a structure of the African Union, belonging to a commission called Setswana Cross-Border Language Commission, whereby we harmonize Setswana spoken in South Africa, Botswana, Zimbabwe, and Namibia. And I'm also involved in South African Translators Institute, a private sector that looks into languages, owing to the fact that we don't have a language practitioners concept. I'm also been involved in issues of name, street name in the city of Tshwane. I presented papers on language promotion activities, your International Maritime Day, and quite a number of language activities that are happening annually. And in my own right, I believe in multilingualism. I'm a proponent of multilingualism. And it's my second time here in the Parliament of the Republic. In 2012, I was invited by Johnny van der Westhuizen to the Portfolio Committee to make oral presentation to the then South African language people. So language is in my blood. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Ask questions, but my question is learning that you are employed in the Department of Public Works, is your employer aware that you should you be appointed as a member of this board? What is the requirement? Do you have to go back to your employer and declare that you've been appointed? And as you know, that there are meetings, if you are appointed to be a board member, there are meetings that are scheduled 4 years, 4 times a year, and there are meetings in between, depending on the workload that is there. And how would you handle that? How is it handled within government?
Thank you very much, for the question. Upon receipt of the invitation for an interview, I had a meeting with my director. I indicated to him that I've been invited for this interview and what is at stake. From time to time, I may be required to attend a meeting and also to contribute, and that this is not a job, this is a contribution, it's a national duty. Then I also contacted our HR. In our policy, there is an allowance to participate in duties such as serving on commissions, boards, parliament, and in terms of the internal policies of the department, I think I am allowed. And that redeem the guy. Okay.
So you have applied to serve in the board of PEMSA. That's a good thing. We appreciate that, especially those who are young and energetic to take this responsibility of ensuring that we promote and develop our African languages. I appreciate that and I applaud you for that. Say, the Constitution acknowledged that the languages such as the Nama, the Khoi, and the Seh must be promoted as well as developed, so that they are on the same par with the other languages, which include English and Afrikaans. What are you going to ensure that the languages that I've mentioned receive respect and equality, recognition as outlined in the Constitution?
Thank you very much for the question. The issue of Khoi and San languages, which I believe are the languages of the first people in the Republic, their development is long overdue. One of the things that I will contribute in ensuring that they occupy their space is to mobilize the whole society in general to appreciate that there are those languages of the Khoi and Seh, and start maybe to develop communication campaigns and in a simplified way and in an appealing way to say, as per the Constitution of the Republic, those are languages that should also be appreciated. For instance, if you look at the 1 cent, the currency that we're using, you look, there is something written loosely meaning diverse people unite. You start from there, that this language has been coded, it has been codified, it's written. So let's have programs, simplified programs, to ensure that we run society behind that. In terms of leaflets, adverts, you know, in the media space, and so on and so on.
How will you ensure that there's ethical leadership and integrity in the board, but as well as the institution that you are going to oversight on it, which is the executive of PEMSA? You know that there's corruption in South Africa, but now I'm referring to corruption in government, particularly in our entities, where members of the boards of these entities get compromised by officials, and in the process they become the enabler of corruption. How are you going to ensure that there will be ethical leadership and integrity in this institution?
Thank you very much. This is a very serious question, and corruption is killing the moral fiber of our society. I will ensure that I equip myself very well with the King's Report on Corporate Governance. Transparency, accountability, value for money, and ensure that the board that I may find myself participating in sticks to its mission, vision, and values. And on the other hand, if one transgresses those rules or those norms, there should be consequences without fear or favor, because we cannot afford forever to be in the news or out there in the public space for wrong reasons. And then if you are not fit for purpose, the honorable thing is to let, resign and allow others who are fit for purpose to continue the good work of God.
Thanks very much. We can now discuss. You see, when you are a board member, you will be charged with the conducting oversight over the executive. And in doing that, the line of oversight and interference at times become blurred. You can't even see it. In your understanding, do you know when a board member would be interfering and when the board member would be doing oversight over the executive? Because at times, the executive, when you do your oversight, will allege that now you are not doing an oversight, you are interfering. And when you are interfering and when you are doing oversight, can you just clarify where the two meet?
Thank you very much for the question. I think the board will have to provide strategic leadership guided by the Constitution as well as the South African Nami Court as amended. And then the accounting officer of the board is responsible for operation and administration. In my view, the board should not interfere in supply chain matters, in HR matters. But whenever they pick up an anomaly, they can alert and provide leadership based on the rules that are there.
And can you be specific? Particular there, there's translation, and the board become aware of it. That, for example, a particular company was awarded a tender when that particular company in actual fact was not qualifying to get that tender. And if you intervene in that instance, the CEO or the CFO will say, now we are interfering. Can you be specific in your response?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I will attempt to respond using my foresight and intuition. Upon recognition of an anomaly, as we just indicated, I think there are structures and procedures to be followed by board, maybe to inform the portfolio committee, to inform the Minister of Arts and Culture, whatever the case may be, and so that proper procedures and proper structures are followed in dealing with such matters.
What do you understand to the role of the audit committee about?
The role of the audit committee is to ensure that the finances of the board are used properly, guided by treasury rules and regulations like your PFMA. PFMA. So I think it's very important. And also to check and balances to ensure that you have the controls are in place. It's not, how can I put it, like, in lack of a better word. It's not like we are just doing for the sake of doing, you know, we are doing things according to the book and to the ladder.
Lastly, from me, what could be the conflict of interest that might arise in you if you get appointed to serve in the board, what would be that conflict of interest? If it's there, then you must raise it. If it's not there, then you will indicate that there will be no such.
I do not have any conflict of interest nor any personal interest in serving in the board. I think it is a national duty while I still can. Thank you.
You have explained and you have taken us on board on your experience in terms of the language. And I assume that because you said at one stage you were volunteering for a member there were in some way in Oritele on behalf of PENSAL, rendering the same service that PENSAL is responsible for. Now, can you then tell us your understanding of the mandate of PENSAL as it relates to the South African Board Act of 19, Language Board Act of 1995 and the Constitution of the Republic?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Through you, Chair, if you could allow me, I have copies of the Constitution here in all official languages as well as in English to refer and also to distribute so that I can respond. The language is flawed in the constitution is very clear about the mandate of PENSAL as well as the constitution. In my interaction with the communities of Moretele, I ensured that they become aware, they are mobilized to rally behind PENSAL and understand PEN South African Language Board as a Chapter 9 institution that is responsible for monitoring and evaluating the implementation of multilingualism, promoting and creating conditions for the development of all official languages as they are now currently being hindered by the Use of Official Languages Act that has been passed in 2012. Development of Kwe and Namsana as well as sign language, and ensuring that languages that are used for heritage language, the so-called heritage languages, are also given prominence. So that is the mandate of PENSAL, also taking cue from this. But if I can chip in and say, through my interaction with the communities, I realized that there are good policies, there is a wonderful constitution, there is an act, but we've got a policy fatigue. Policy fatigue, I will explain it as absence of implementation. You'll find that in everything that you have been articulating, well written, there is an implementation gap. So those are the issues that I really want to work hard on and ensure that we implement.
We make sure that the languages work for us, we benefit from the language that we use.
Okay. And so you also said that you believe in multilingualism. As you can look currently in our country, we especially in the private sector, we have a very, very serious problem of multilingualism. Yeah, there are also problems there in private sector, in public sector. Then what is your stance in multilingualism? And why do you think it will be a good thing to be practiced in both public and private sector?
Thank you very much. Multilingualism is a national resource. It is a tool to ensure that we build the nation and then we also promote social cohesion. It is very important for the private sector to also play a very critical role. If you look at the NDP chapter 14, it talks about incentivizing private sectors who are taking multilingualism seriously. You look at the banks, some of the banks are trying and some of the companies. But my view is that they must pull together with government in an effort to reach it at a halfway, because government cannot do it alone. So private sector must be encouraged. They must also be part of programs of government, particularly these awards, in terms of awards, in terms of recognition. Because if you reward the private sector, you are also marketing a private sector, which means they are in good state to put their brand there, that it represents the whole linguistic diversity of South Africa. So it's one of the, it's very critical to mobilize and the private sector behind the multilingualism, because it is a national resource.
I agree with you, but now the problem is, the Act has been passed in 1995, and in earnest, they are not doing it all, they are not doing well at all. Yes, your banks, you find it there, you know, ATM, all these languages are incorporated today. But also within the banks, there are other sectors that are not taking this into consideration. Now, if you are appointed in this board tomorrow, let's assume that tomorrow you'll be appointed, and with the analysis that they aren't doing very well, what should you do now? What should you come in as this person who is a language activist, who is passionate about these languages? What should you do to make sure that these people have to adhere to the law? Because there is an act that compels everybody to promote multilingualism, but up until now, we aren't doing well at all.
Thank you very much. The first step is to win their heart and mind. You go to the private sector, they've got chambers, I think they've got structures. You can go to each and every private sector. It's going to be a very huge task. Through their structures, you engage them, you come up with language promotion activities. Very simplified, you educate, you empower their CEOs and their COOs about the importance of promoting multilingualism, looking and also advising them to look at their clientele. You may find that 85% of their clientele are not speaking English. They speak any of the official languages. So they should conduct, you also educate by saying, conduct language audits. Look at the number of people who are doing business with, and then leverage on their languages so that you can retain them. Then it becomes a national program rolled out even to those who are defiant. I'll give an example. On Sunday, I was reading City Press. There is a story that at Dis-Chem, a staff are not allowed to speak with clients in any other language besides English. And that thing caught the attention of myself as well as the media industry. So those people, the retail sector and other sectors of economy, there must be campaigns, promotions, but starting at higher level and going down to the lower level.
And it's not only
Dis-Chem.
A lot of these retailers, they don't even allow them to put their African names here. If my name is Bungile Marta, instead they will put Marta, other than the Bungile name, because they feel that this name, which is my African name, my own name that I take pride in, then it's
like not a right name that she use. It's all over shame. You can go and then anyone sitting here in the checkers, I've fought with them. I don't know how many times. The next time they will not allow me to come in. Because I would refuse to be assisted by mother. I would want you to tell me your African name. What's your African name? Because I know every African is foreign name. So let's come closer now to wake up Eastern Harry as an official of the Department of Public Works and Public Works. And you are at a very higher level, which is very strategic. As this portfolio committee, we have been, I think, for almost two or three times almost every year, we have been having a problem where the Department of Arts and Culture will take us on board that different departments fail to implement language policies. It's a pity because I'm not so sure whether your department has adhered to that. It's not part of those departments that have not adhered to the establishment of the grid of language policies. Now, if you are appointed, before I can come to the question, some of the reasons that will be cited that I think you will understand, it sometimes becomes difficult within the public sector where an official will ask the other official to do this because that official will feel you are undermining me, or else I'm a better official, a DG, you are a director, you can't tell me what to do. Those are the things that we have experienced. And we are not doing very well as government in terms of that, even including municipalities. When I'm talking of government, even including municipalities. Now, if you are appointed at the board, in this board, what will you do to compare your colleagues now? I'm talking about your colleagues now, to adhere to this act, because this act is very important. It's very, very, it's key. It's a very important thing, but we have been struggling, and I think we will exit next year with almost all of them, or if those that have not done the language policy, there are those that are exempted, and I don't understand even the issue of exemption. Why should you be exempted? Because they are still in this time, including your Chapter 9 institutions. Some of them have not done it. What should you do now if you are appointed in the board to compel them to implement the language policy act?
Thank you very much. That is a very honest and good question. We have not been doing very well, but not to say that I'm defending my cause. I cannot be a judge of my own cause. Our policy at the Department of Public Works is currently undergoing a review. We have reported to principal via their compliance and monitoring tool. So we are hoping that as a department, 2019 financial year will be full implementing multilingualism, fully fledged. What I will do to compare my colleagues. In previous engagements, such as our national language forums that we used to hold every year at the Department of Arts and Culture with all national departments and all stakeholders entities, I raised this question to say, I'm at middle management level. I'm given a task to implement the language policy. I do all my work. I have good credentials. I do my research, everything, experience, but the problem is final approval, particularly in resourcing the language unit. You find that you cannot proceed to implement the policies because you are told of other things. You know, it's not a priority of the department. There are no budgets and all those things. What I'll do, point number one, face-to-face engagements with the accounting officers of departments, not writing letters or giving them templates to fill in, because they sometimes, a junior officer just fill in and the accounting officer just sign even without reading. So I'll ensure that face-to-face engagement to inform them about the agency and the importance of complying with the Use of Official Languages Act. And also to say location of this language unit should be located in the office of the Director General. They should be DG's direct reports. Because sometimes you find that they are misplaced, they are at HR. HR people are not people who could have repaired a number of things. So if they are located in the office of the DG, they will be given a priority because there will be DG's direct reports, and they will also be in line with diversity management. You look at issues of employment equity, you look at issues of disability, you look at issues of youth. They, in many departments, they are located in the highest office, that is the office of the accounting office. So language is part of broader diversity management within the public sector. So if they are located there and we have one-on-one meetings to educate to them, you know, to shift their outlook on these issues, I think we will be in a better state to continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mohade, if you are appointed to the board, right, you obviously have a lot of skills, but we are looking also for particular skills. So what set of skills are you going to bring to the board, and how will these skills be of use to the board to achieve this?
Thank you very much for the question. I'll leverage on my language knowledge and competency skills, translation, interpreting, terminology development, and language planning. And throughout my own career, I've also studied managing public policy. I could have graduated yesterday at first, but I declined the graduation to come and honor this national duty. So I have done a certificate post at LQF level 8, that is master level. It's called Managing Public Policy. Issues of policy, planning and implementation, those are the skills I will bring to the board. As well as I also done advanced management development skills. Issues raised by Monahe Shumana on corporate governance, on conflict of interest, on ethics, I'll also bring those issues because I've also been trained in strategic management and such things.
All right. With the skills, let's go a little bit more on a practical level. What values are you going to bring to the PENSA board, and how will these values assist the board?
Thank you. Once more, the value of respect. Respect each one's duties and space, if each one has space to do his or her job. Do not micromanage people. The value of honesty. In all your end, we are not angels, there is no Jesus Christ, there is no Moses. We'll make mistakes. But we should be honest and own up to our mistakes whenever they arise. And then the value of integrity. We should be beyond reproach. When we are out there, we have been nominated the country has confidence in you. So your conduct must be beyond reproach, both private as well as professional. And also a value for money. The boards are funded from the fiscus. We know that the fiscus, we are at the crossroads. The fiscus is under constraint. So we must ensure that we do more with little, but on the other hand, not compromising quality.
Pencil takes this, the this part of his mandate seriously and ensure that, it's taken forward as much as possible.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yes, sign language is very important. It's a language spoken by also the electorate. So we should appreciate that we have not done a lot with regard to this development. I will ensure that for gradual implementation of sign language, we'll start at our front office, our reception areas. We should ensure that our receptionists are equipped with basic sign language skills like hello, how are you? Basic greetings and salutation. And thank you. To be grateful when you're here. Thank you, Jefferson. And also to understand that they are differentially abled, the sign language people. So we will start the front offices. We will sensitize them. Our HR, when they invite for interviews like here, your supply chains, trainer briefings, supply chain briefings, campaigns out there, your minister's budget votes, your SAPC, those pictures of sign language interpreters need to become a little bit bigger so that even those who don't have good vision, they are able to see, so that we reverse that occurrence during the late Dr. Mandela's funeral, where someone was just to be something else. So we'll take you from that to that. We have been a laughing stock of the world, but now that there is this spot which is more conscious, sign language will have to be taken very seriously. Thank you, Chair.
Which we all felt that sign language should not be a language for the deaf only. It should be a national language. We should all learn sign language, so I think it's important. Also, other things that are important. And are there any other questions?
Your department, it's not complying in ensuring that there's language policy. And let's say you are appointed to the board, and you are the one who must ensure that all public entities, including your departments, have the language policy. Will you stand to your Director General and tell him that he must comply?
Thank you very much, Munahish, Honorable Member. Charity begins at home. It is not personal to engage the Director General on a national mandate. I'm duty bound and I'm paid as well to ensure that languages are given prominence in government department. Yes, I'm willing to engage with the DG, frankly guided by values, as the member has just said, but which values do you cherish? Values of respect, honesty, engagement. What is it next?
What do you think is the problem? Why department are not complying with the decision?
Thank you very much. Program number one. Management that is not taking other operations serious. Priorities will be in auditing, finances, and other things, forgetting issues such as language diversity management. So, language should be at the heart of the department. For instance, in the annual report, language should also be indicated. What have you done with regard to language development and promotion, multilingualism? How many people have you employed? Budget. And I understand there may be programs of budgets, cut and stuff. but I'm a product of Pensar. I was given an internship. We can initiate a project to say we will identify, say, 100 unemployed language practitioners, take them for a thorough course, and then let them be employed by government through internships so that they grow within their ranks. Thank you very much, Chairperson. In conclusion, I would like to use this analogy that we should emulate the outlook to life of the Akan people of Ghana. Akan people of Ghana, they've got this totem bird that they call Sankofa. Sankofa is a bird that can fly looking forward, but its head facing backward. Simply meaning that you go and fetch that which works to enrich the future. So my view is that there have been previous forums, there have been previous engagements. We will emulate the best practice that which worked and come up with the current in order to ensure the future and ensure that multilingualism and all policies are implemented. Honorable members, thank you for the time you took to interview me. You have been a great panel. Thank you.